Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I am Joe Galina. And with me, as always, my buddy Scott Chu.
Hey, Joe, how's it going, man? It's been such a weird day because I was just telling you, I actually had a whole night where I was the only person in this house.
Beautiful.
My wife and the twins were off at grandma's. My older son was at a sleepover. I had no idea what to do with myself. I'm like, that's the thing. I didn't do anything. Like, there was
that's the best thing to do is nothing sometimes.
Oh, yeah. And it was weird because, like, I sort of woke up this morning and I was like, I didn't do anything. And I was like, did I waste it? No. I used it just right. That's exactly what I was supposed to do.
Yes. Sometimes you just need to recharge the batteries. And I think you did the right thing. So apologize if my voice is a little raspy. We were at a graduation party last night, and the graduation party turned into like a little karaoke thing. So we were singing Hey Jude, and you know how Hey Jude ends, right? With all that crazy screaming. So I got involved in that, and that's why I'm a little hoarse today, but I apologize. So how's everything else going? It's a big week for your Tigers, right? Tariq Skubal and Eduardo Rodriguez coming back this week.
Oh, I've been waiting for it.
They're so close. That division in the AL Central
is so bad.
Yeah.
So bad.
And what are they? They're back what? They're within striking distance. They're only five games
out.
Yeah,
they have like 30. They have like 34 wins and they're in striking distance. That tells you a lot.
Five games out, yeah.
Yeah, it's a horrible division, but that means everyone's in it, right? So the Tigers are not the most talented team, but you don't have to be, right? I mean, you have to. Eventually you feel like the Guardians should take it over. They have probably the best player in the division in Jose Ramirez. They have, they have the best pitching. They have all those things. And yet they can't, seem to pull away. It's sort of like, you know, in the NFL, there's always that one division that sends like an 8-8 team to the playoffs or worse. Right. Like somebody sent it. That's the AL Central. I mean, that's just what's going to happen. The Guardians can be a little scary come playoff time because of the starting pitching depth. They have a really, really good closer. You don't need a great offense to win in the playoffs. You just need to score one more than the other guys. Mm-hmm. Right. And when you're managing it so carefully, you know, that one run makes a big difference and they can squeak out runs. They've got guys who can steal all these kinds of things, an experienced manager. But until then, right, like being able to score does matter. And nobody in this division does that very well.
Right, right. You kind of feel bad for the Royals who are 17 and a half games out. But other than that, like you said, everyone else, the White Sox just 6.5 games out, Tigers 5 games out, Guardians a game out, and the Twins at 42-42 in first place. But also good point on the Guardians, man. They really know how to develop starting pitching.
Yeah, I mean, again, not doing them a ton of good in terms of winning games, which it should be, right? Because again, they have the best closer in the division. They have most of the best starters in the division. They have the best third baseman. I mean, probably the best hitter in the division. You could argue between Jose Ramirez and right now Lewis Robert. But Lewis Robert is also a young hitter. He's already approaching like more games than he's ever played in a single season in the pros. And that means he's played half a season. That's about all he's ever given us. So it's kind of, you know, the Guardians should be dominating this division. The Twins aren't really better at the Guardians doing anything right now. But here they are, leading the division and have been ahead of the Guardians almost the entire time. It's bizarre.
Yeah. And since we're talking about the Twins, I'll say, and just like that, Jose Miranda is back in the big leagues, playing third base, batting seventh today. By the way, we're recording this on Sunday, July 2nd. And unfortunately for the Twins, Royce Lewis went to the IL with an oblique injury, which they're very tricky. So you never know how long, you know, he might be out. But remember, I had big hopes for Jose Miranda after his 2022 season. He had 15 home runs, 66 RBI. with a .268 average last season. Thought that he could build upon that, but unfortunately, in 35 games, batted .220 with just three home runs. But he's back in the bigs, and I'll just, you know, one other thing about Lewis, man, not much fanfare for him, but basically he was getting the job done. 326, 354, 474 slug in his 26 games so far this season. Four home runs, 15 RBI. Expected batting average, .247. He's not walking enough and striking out a little bit too much. So maybe he might tail off a little bit, but for now, getting the job done.
Yeah, you know, starting with Royce Lewis, he had really turned things on over the last week and a half or so. Mm-hmm. Since June 20th, he was hitting .395. The strikeout rate was down, still wasn't walking much. And you could probably argue that a lot of his results were maybe a bit luck driven, simply, you know, just by looking at some of the basic indicators. But he's a player who's always been exciting in terms of, like, he's got power, he's got speed. The hit tool isn't great, but he's been injured so much. I mean, this guy's been in the league since 2017. He was drafted as an 18-year-old. And I mean, he was the first overall pick in that draft. And it's just, I mean, he's never really played like full seasons, right? 2018, right. 2019, he plays mostly full minor league seasons. But 2020, he was in the complex league the whole time. And I think was dealing with injuries. 2021, he doesn't play at all. Mm-hmm. Right. 2022, he plays a grand total of 46 games. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, you know, this season, he's only played, let's see, between the majors and minors, he's played 36 games out of what, like 81?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's hurt again.
Point.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's hurt again. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that is just killer for Royce Lewis. You hate to see, you know, the type of injury that can nag as well.
Yes.
You know, I think in Dynasty, someone needs to be rostering him somewhere, even if the projected outcomes aren't nearly what they were two or three seasons ago. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this is still a guy who I think could hit for a decent average and who's got pop and speed. But for this season, if you've got a limited IL, like only two spots or something like that, there's a pretty good chance you've got better guys on your IL and can't really afford to keep Royce Lewis around. I think he's going to get, you know, if you can hold him because you've got deep ILs or something, that's great. But mm-hmm. if you've got pressure, he's probably the guy you're letting go unless you have, you know, some other random player on the IL.
Tough to judge with an oblique strain. Could be out a couple weeks, could be out a couple of months. You know, they're just so tricky to figure out.
Yeah, and you know, injured players can just be, especially these like core injuries. For example, you know, Seiya Suzuki started the season with a core injury. Mm-hmm. He's back, but he hasn't quite been what we've wanted. He's shown little flashes here and there. Bryce Harper, it wasn't a core injury, but he had Tommy John surgery, and he's been able to play. He came back way earlier than we expected, but the power hasn't quite been what we're looking for. It's mm-hmm. really tough with some of these injuries because it's not just about when a player comes back. It's when can a player come back and perform. We saw the same thing last season with like Max Muncy, who also came back from a Tommy John surgery, came back early, but never, like, he didn't find the power until the last two or three months of the season. So it's again, it's more than just if they might give him a return date, but is that the return date? You know, that's the return date, like on the field. That's not necessarily the return date you're looking for your fantasy roster.
Right, right. Yep. Any interest in Miranda at this point, or just a wait and see approach?
You know, the Twins, the Twins don't have like a lot of star power on this team, right? Like, I guess Byron Buxton, but he hasn't been exactly what you're looking for. I think that Miranda is probably going to be the everyday third baseman.
Mm-hmm. I would guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think he's going to be a platoon either. Right. I wondered if like Donovan Solano and Edward, you know, Edward Julian and all this stuff, but none of these guys have really worked out the way the Twins have hoped. So, you know, Miranda, he's fine. Right. Like he's a guy, he should be, you know, the player that he probably reminds me the most in terms of like stat production would be like a Ty France, a guy who has maybe like 20 home run ish power and mm-hmm. could pile up counting stats by making a lot of contact, not a great OBP, but could have a good batting average. But that's it. It's a low ceiling, high floor kind of profile for, Jose Miranda. And the problem is that the ceiling, you know, hasn't really changed, but the floor has looked a whole, you know, has gotten a whole lot worse, knowing right. that they could just kick him back down to the minors, not really care. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, this team does have like other injuries that are allowing him to kind of stay in. You know, he's only up because Royce Lewis isn't there to play third base. And because Jorge Polanco, Lord knows when he's coming back, he's not around to play in the middle infield to move some of these other guys to third base. So it's in a very deep league, I might look at making the ad because playing time matters. But in 12 mm-hmm. teamers, nah, he'll probably sit on the wire unless he does something exciting.
Right, right. Okay. So like I said, we're recording this on June 2nd of Independence Day weekend. And I thought I'd just give you a question in terms of since it's, you know, July 4th weekend, any player or players that you're personally declaring your independence from there, Scott?
Yeah, so I'm in a couple 12-team leagues with only three outfielders. And the guy that I am just sick of rostering is, you know, even though he's got like sort of a hit streak kind of going on, man, am I sick of Giancarlo Stanton. Stanton has been, yeah. I mean, he has just been awful. Mm-hmm. He was fine before he went on the IL, right? Since he's come back, and that was at the beginning of the June, he has all of three home runs, right? Like, three. That is not, I mean, Giancarlo Stanton, this is a guy who, if on your roster in a three outfield league, you're holding him, he's got a 45 WRC plus since he came back from the IL. 11 hits, that's it. Two doubles, three home runs, and a bunch of singles. He's striking out nearly 30% of the time, though he didn't mm-hmm. strike out in either of the last two games. That's nice, right? Now, granted, you know, one of those games is against Oakland's pitching staff who couldn't strike you out if they wanted to. He's hitting 151, slugging 301. I mean, it's awful.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been at, you know, objectively terrible, and he's batting in the middle of the Yankees lineup right now, as you know, well as anyone else. That doesn't really matter right now. That's not a good mm-hmm. thing. This offense mm-hmm. is not scoring, right? Like I used to be salty about Aaron Judge winning the MVP last season just because Shohei Ohtani is Shohei Ohtani. Right. But now I just see like this whole freaking offense is just, you know, like everybody worrying about Judge and not caring about everyone else, which gives everyone else a chance to hit. These guys they just don't score. They don't get on base. They can't do anything. They strike out too much. So like him, he's a third, you know, Giancarlo Stanton's 33 years old. He's a massive mm-hmm. injury risk. He's not performing. And even if he does perform, like it's going to be hard to get RBI. This guy has 8 RBI in June. 8, right? He's been batting second, like basically second, third, fourth, like the entire month. 21 games, he has 8 RBI.
Welcome to my nightmare. Yeah, I mean, you know, I watch Yankee games every day and the poor guy looks totally lost at the plate, you know, and also you take a look, you know, he, in the past when he's gone through these, he's very, very streaky, but in the past, at least he's gotten on base, taken walks. But if you look at his walk rate this season, I think it's just under 6%, which is way down from what it usually is. The guy just, like I said, he just looks awful, looks lost at the plate. The thing is, and, you know, a lot of fantasy managers don't have the patience for it or can't afford to have this slot on their roster taken, but this guy could take the team and put it on his back for a month. He's got that type of power but just so darn streaky. It's sad.
Yeah. And I mean, like so three outfield leagues are becoming the norm in terms of like a lot of the new default settings in ESPN, Yahoo, they're three outfield leagues. Mm-hmm. You just don't have to be that patient.
Right.
Again, if you've got a deep IL, like he ends up being less of a drag because mm-hmm. when he does go on the IL, you can put him on there. But like the last, I mean, really his last 144 games. So almost, well, for him, that's more than a full season, right? Played 110 games last year. He hit 31 home runs, only hit 211. And at some point, you just stop being able to just say like, yeah, but he's got power. But mm-hmm. now it's like, yeah, he's got power, but he's costing you when he's not good. He's costing you in every category, right? And when he is good, he's still hurting you in the ratios, right? Yeah. Like, I don't know what, I've not dug deep enough to find out what started happening in 2022. Like, the strikeouts went up a little bit. The walk rate went down a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, well, 2021, that started happening too. But in 2021, he was still a good player. Now, mm-hmm. now it's like now he's a lot more Joey Gallo. Right?
Well, you read my mind. I was going to say that. He's
become a big right-handed Joey Gallo, except Joey Gallo like always walks and Stanton isn't doing that either. So like imagine Joey Gallo, but doesn't walk.
And at least Joey Gallo, you know, for, in real life baseball, he plays a good defense. You know, Giancarlo Stanton, you hardly ever, ever plays the field. And if you ever watch him run down, you know, run the bases, it's scary. The guy can't run. He's gotten, I guess, so huge and so injury prone that if he goes full out running the bases, he's going to come up with a hamstring or a calf injury or something. It's really sad to watch. But you read my mind with the Joey Gallo comment, man.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you're looking at a player like Giancarlo Stanton and he's on your bench and you're like, when am I going to see the upside? You got to keep in mind like what that upside is, because I don't think that upside is the one that we saw in like 2021, right? 2018, 2019, right? We're looking a lot more at the guy who never plays, right? Like, does he play 100 games this year?
Probably not, but we'll have to see.
He'd have to play pretty much every
game. He's probably got at least one more IL stint in him before the season's over. Let's face it.
Yeah. I mean, he needs to basically play every game from here to the end of the season to get to 100 games.
And they rest him too. It's not like, you know, they rest him every few games.
And he's hitting a home run about every, if you include how he was hot in the beginning of the year, he's hitting a home run about every 5 games, right? He's got 7 home runs, 34 games. So like that probably sounds better than it is because it's just not that great. Right. Mm-hmm. Like it comes out to like something pretty good if he played a whole season. But right now, if he hits one home run every 5 games and he plays, you know, 80 more games, like you're still kind of being like, well, where's the rest? Like, where if he keeps that pace? Yeah, I get that. But, you know, I get a decent number of home runs, and power is harder to find right now compared to maybe how it used to be. And power is hard to find compared now to things like speed. Speed's almost easier to find on your wire right now. Guys who slap the ball and might steal some bases, whereas like the true power hitters are just hard to find. But like, even if he gives you a home run every 5 games, and even if he plays the rest of the season, he's also just a drag everywhere. This is supposed to be a plus RBI guy too, but you're not going to be that on this Yankees team. So all of a sudden, this concept of, you know, if I'm holding Giancarlo Stanton, what am I holding it for? What is the light at the end of the tunnel? And unfortunately, it just doesn't look that bright right now.
Right.
Right. Like the light at the end of the tunnel is a guy who is still probably back, you know, barely a third outfielder, right? Mm-hmm. Even with all the power. So you're in a 3 outfield league. You've got this guy, you're holding him, hoping that he's a decent third outfielder. I mean, there's guys like that on the wire. I mean, I'm ready to move on if there's something good on the wire. And we'll probably talk more later in this episode about guys who are out there that might be exciting. Like, I'm not just saying cut him. That's the other thing I should probably say is when I say I'm cutting a guy, I'm declaring my independence. Like, it's still very much a matter of also who am I doing it for?
Mm-hmm.
Right. A good example would be, you know, TJ Friedl's been hot, and I've nothing against TJ Friedl, right? TJ Friedl is a guy who every time he's in the lineup for the Reds, batting at the top of the order, he's an outfielder, he produces, but he's hurt all the time, right? I mean, TJ Friedl doesn't play in a lot of games. He's not someone with huge upside either. So like, am I making that move? Am I making Giancarlo Stanton for TJ Friedl? Like, that's pretty borderline because that's kind of a side grade. Right. Because I'm kind of taking on one injury risk with power to take on another injury risk. That's more of like an all around contributor. Like, OK,
let me tell you something else about Friedl, too, is right now he's the hot, you know, waiver wire pickup. Everyone wants him. You take a look at, and I know you wanted to talk about expected stats, but you look, you know, when I looked, he was batting .313, expecting batting average .247, .486 slug, expected slug .315, .373 wOBA. Expected WOBA 287. So we're looking at Friedl maybe being, you know, kind of a streamer, maybe a stopgap replacement for Stanton, somebody that you're going to have to replace down the line again.
Yeah. And so what I want to talk about with expected stats, I'm glad you brought them up, is that there's I've talked before about how at PitcherList, we have expected stats on the site that are different mm-hmm. than the ones that you see on Baseball Savant. On Baseball Savant, yeah. You see. Yeah, so it's really interesting. And what the two strategies aren't bad, right? Neither one is wrong, right? Baseball Savant doesn't do it wrong. PitcherList adds batted ball direction. And what that does is makes them meaningfully more descriptive, right? And to me, the best use of expected stats is to describe what we should have expected up to now, right? It is not for... You know, it's very limited in its ability to tell us what we should expect going forward, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
so
we had this talk
really predictive, right?
Right. If you're a big nerd in like R values and stuff, I'm not a huge one, but I sort of understand them. Basically, the predictiveness, the best one, actually, the stuff on Savant is more predictive because it uses fewer variables, which means there's less potential things sort of skewing up your data. If you do that, it's R values like sort of in the mid 50s, which is like not super predictive, right? But when you want to look at on the descriptive side, right, the R values like go way up, right? Like talking mm-hmm. about what has happened, they're both in like the 0.8s, right? Like that's really good. They're very Statcast is much better at telling us about what did happen than predicting the future, because all kinds of things that we can't measure can change the future, but we're able to measure a lot of things that already happened, which makes sense if you think about it. So TJ Friedel is a guy who, despite the fact that he's really, really pull heavy, right? Usually if someone's really, really pull heavy, the Baseball Savant numbers will underestimate what it is they're able to do. Right. Mm-hmm. Because it'll think like, well, you know, a fly ball is a fly ball is a fly ball, when we know that a pulled fly ball has way more value than a fly ball the opposite way, and especially than a fly ball up the middle. Right. Because fly balls to center field are almost always outs. Mm-hmm. Fly balls that are pulled are almost always home runs. And fly balls mm-hmm. the opposite way, they have to go like the same distance, but players just generally don't hit them as hard going the other way. Right. The mm-hmm. power all comes to the pull field. So TJ Friedel, who pulls the ball 48% of the time this season and in his career pulls the ball like 50% of the time, you would think, oh, Statcast is going, you know, Savant is going to underestimate, right? The number you gave in the 230s for expected average. Actually, Friedel has another problem, right? And it's something that's really sort of just happening this season, not so much in years past. TJ Friedel hits everything on the freaking ground. So that's problematic, right? So he's trying to get to first base, and where's he hitting the ball as a lefty? He's pulling a bunch of ground balls. He's hitting them right to the first baseman, right? The ball's getting to the base before he does. He's just happening to find the hole right now, which, you know, maybe you could start arguing like, oh yeah, well, it's the shift. But like, this is usually a guy who hits fly balls. He's hitting a bunch of ground balls to the pull field for him, which is just not something that you can expect to be great going forward, mm-hmm. right? So what Statcast is able to do for us is be very descriptive about what's happened. And what's happened isn't nearly like what should have happened. What we expect to happen based on the velocity, the direction, everything of the balls he's hitting, PitcherList expected average for him is 218, mm-hmm. right? 218. That average comes down another like, you know, 15, 20 points from the one on Savant, which was in the 230s, because a bunch of those ground balls are being pulled. So like mm-hmm. ground balls like up the middle can tend to squeeze through a little better than a ground ball that's pulled. Mm-hmm. So like PitcherList is actually almost penalizing that way in terms of expected average, because we're like, you're pulling a bunch of ground balls, dude. Like that's a really hard way to get on base. It's mm-hmm. working so far, but it's not something that like you really expect. He's going to need to hit the ball in the air more to succeed, right? Again, mm-hmm. the expected average, that 218 for TJ Friedel, that's not what I expect going forward, because I don't expect him to pull ground balls quite this often, right? He's hitting ground balls about 10% more often than he did in each of the last two seasons, mm-hmm. right? So that is not something I do expect, right? I don't think that's what he's going to do. So I wouldn't use Statcast to try to project what he's going to do going forward, because it's doing a good job of telling me what already happened. But I also know that his ground ball rate's way out of whack. It's the same kind of conversation we had last week about Patrick Bailey, right? Expected stats are telling you that Patrick Bailey's hitting the ball really, really well because he is. And he's also hitting like 12% more line drives than I expect him to hit for the rest of the season. And line drives are almost always hits. So that's going to change. That's why StatCast and expected stats aren't able to tell me a good job of what's going to happen, because they're not projecting what his line drive rate will be, right? Mm-hmm. They're not projecting what his ground ball rate will be. They're just telling me what has happened. Again, there is predictive value, but that predictive value goes out the window if the batted ball profile looks way out of whack, right? Mm-hmm. Unless you think there's a real change and that it's something they're going to continue. I talked about Isak Paredes because he's really started the pulling of the ball the last two seasons. And just knowing how good his hit tool is, I think Isak Paredes can continue to pull fly balls. That means I think he can outperform he will continue to outperform his expected batting average and expected slugging. But like in this case with TJ Friedl, I don't expect him to continue to outperform because the batted ball profile tells me that, he's hitting a lot of ground balls, right? The only way he gets better is by improving the batted ball profile. Otherwise, he will start getting closer and closer to this expected average of 218. So I know the start it is Giancarlo Stanton, but so if I'm looking to drop Giancarlo Stanton, I'm not just taking the next hot thing out the wire. I do want it to have a little bit of substance, and I'm not sure TJ Friedl has that.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested. I think we should take a quick break here. One of the guys that I'm looking to declare my independence for, I don't even know why I still roster him, but is Tim Anderson. And while we're on our break, I want you to take a look at the pitcher list numbers, because you talk about a guy that's hitting the ball on the ground a lot. It's Tim Anderson. But we'll talk about him right after this. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I am Joe Galina. I'm here with my buddy Scott Chu, and we were talking about the differences in StatCast's expected stats and pitcher list's expected stats. And before we took our quick break, I brought up Tim Anderson as a guy, you know, that I wanted to declare my independence from this July 4th weekend. Scott had already talked about Giancarlo Stanton, and he had talked also about TJ Friedl and the fact that he hits a lot of ground balls, and talked about the effect on his expected stats and whatnot. But what'd you find about Tim Anderson there, Scott?
Yeah, so first thing, let's be clear, he's not on the hitter list right now. If you go to his pitcher list page,
right?
Yeah, you'll see a rank. I just now realized that it's showing ranks after 150 on the player pages. I didn't know that. It's like ranked 166, but really, like, I wouldn't put stock in that number. Either you're in the 150 or you aren't. He is on the taxi squad. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the drop off has been so, so intense.
Zero home runs.
Zero. That's the thing. Howard was down last season, right? Tim Anderson hasn't played more. Like, he hasn't played 125 games in the majors since 2018. He's gotten to 123 twice, but he hasn't played 125. He's probably not going to get there this year. He'd have to play again. If he plays every game from now to the rest of the season, he gets to about 140. Mm-hmm. But it's not looking good. The stolen bases are down, right? I mean, this was a guy who should be able to challenge 20 stolen bases.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Maybe.
Especially
in
this climate.
Yeah, like maybe he could if he plays every single game for the rest of the season, but we're not seeing a spike there. He's not striking out more. He's just making a ton of really, really, really weak contact, right? I mean, that's what happens when you're slugging. His slugging is worse than his OBP, but like, let's be clear, his OBP is 267. And his slug is 263, right? Like, now, expected batting average from pitcher list is 251 instead of his 226. And that's great. It is. But, like, I also don't care because the expected slug is 313. What am I supposed to do with that? Tim Anderson has basically become a guy who used to be able to drive the ball a little bit, maybe hit some doubles for you, and, again, clear the fences at times.
Yeah.
At this point, he hits... I mean, everything on the ground. This guy has a 13.64%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's hitting fly balls less than 15% of the time. And it doesn't really, like, at that point, push, pull, none of that matters because he doesn't hit any fly balls. It doesn't do anything. Right. So Like, has he been unlucky? Like, a little, right? A really cool stat we actually show you on Pitcher List, which you can actually calculate for yourself using regular StatCast data too if you wanted, but we actually show expected BABIP, right? So BABIP by itself is kind of a, I call it like a naked stat, because you could use it to gauge luck, and we did for a long time. The problem is it doesn't actually, like, if the batted balls have all been line drives, their BABIP is going to be really high, because it should be, right? Because line drives drop for hits all the time. Mm-hmm. So he's been unlucky with BABIP by like 20 points, like 20 points of BABIP, which does turn into roughly 20 points of batting average. And if you look at his batting average of 226, our expected batting average of 251, you're like, okay, yeah, that makes some sense. Mm-hmm. But like, and then what, right? So he's been unlucky. So he can be a bad fantasy contributor who's not hurting batting average. Whereas right now he's a bad fantasy contributor and he hurts batting average.
Right.
So like, yes, Joe, declare your independence. Get out of here.
Yes.
Get out of this. There's nothing here for you. There's no, like, could Tim Anderson somehow turn it back on and be the guy he's been in years past? Sure. But there is no indicator of that. Nothing. Right. He can run about as well as he did in years past. Well, last season. Right. Mm-hmm. But like, that's it. That's all he's doing. He's slower. He's not hitting the ball as hard. He's hitting the ball on the ground even more than before. And he was already an extreme ground ball hitter. He still doesn't walk. Right. There's just, and this offense isn't good.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Like I said, 63.7% ground ball rate. Guy that you used to depend on for 15 homers, 20 steals, and a very good batting average.
In the games that he played. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what, I guess the injuries have taken their toll, because he's only 30 years old. So, that's it. He's gone. Let's talk about a couple other players, and we could compare expected stats and whatnot. And then I want to talk about some specific players off of your hitter list. But a guy that caught my eye based on his expected numbers. Now, these are StatCast, and you could, obviously let me know what the hitter list expected stats say. But Ryan Mountcastle, first baseman for the Orioles, who is currently on the IL, was put on the IL due to vertigo, but currently on a rehab assignment, so hopefully he'll be back soon. And in his first 60 games, 11 home runs, 39 RBI, 227 batting average. StatCast thinks that his 421 slug, his expected slug, is 529 compared to the actual 421. And his 227 batting average, they compare it to the expected 264 batting average. And his WOBA, which is 292, his expected WOBA is 351. So, I mean, the power was still there. He was still on a 25-plus home run pace before he went down with his injury. But, what is the pitcher list expected stat model say about him? Most of the projection models like him rest of the season, and I don't know if you do or not.
Yeah, I do. So right now I rank him like around hitter 100. I do want to see what he looks like when he comes back. I think that there's definitely power upside. The pitcher list expected stats, again, StatCast being a little better. I shouldn't say StatCast. We're both using the same StatCast data.
Right.
We're just applying the data differently. So on Baseball Savant, those numbers are a little rosier. Part of that is because Ryan Mountcastle thus far has hit a ton of balls up the middle and he's not pulling them as much. It's actually harder for right-handed hitters to pull home runs in Camden Yards now than it was like two seasons ago based on changes that they made. But, with Mountcastle, I both of them are good, right? Like the pitcher list is saying 251 batting average, 490 expected slug. So again, it takes a little off the top on both those numbers because of all those balls hit to the middle, which, but again, they're more likely to be outs, especially fly balls, which he hits a fair number of. I don't know if I like him quite as much as the expected stats do rest of season, but I think that those are attainable goals, right? Like those are very much in line with the numbers we saw from him last season.
Right.
Even though he was, he was a bit of a disappointment last season, but he was also fairly unlucky. and it's kind of in line with what we saw in 2021. Granted, some of those extra home runs come from Camden Yards being a very good place for right-handers with power. And mm-hmm. now it's a bit of a tougher place. Although if you've got enough power, you can still clear that wall. Just ask Anthony Santander. But Ryan Mountcastle still looks like a similar hitter to the guy he's been in each of the last two seasons. He's just been unluckier this season. I mean, I guess he was walking a little less, but I do expect him to get back to like a league average walk rate, which is about what he's been for his career anyway. So yeah, I like Ryan Mountcastle. I think if managers have cut him because you have tight ILs, I think this would be about the time to go pick him up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's
maybe even a buy low. Who knows, right?
Yeah,
he's on. Yeah,
this offense is not too bad. The pitching, you know, they do face tough pitching a lot in their own division, but like really only from 1.5 teams, right? The Yankees have some good pitching, and then Domingo Herman randomly being good from time to time. But you know, and the Rays, of course, they're a tough. They can be a tough pitching team. They're not as invincible as the record might show. But like this, because for them, the sum of the whole is greater than the sum of their parts, because like they still have starters like Yanni Chirinos who can get blown up and things like that. So Ryan Mountcastle, a player who, again, I think he will show more power. He had been slumping before he kind of went on the IL in terms of power. I think he's going to get some of that back. I think, you know, he is healthy. He does have the ability, I think, still to hit 25 to 30 home runs in a full season. Obviously he's not going to quite have that this season, mm-hmm. but I do think he at least should meet the 22 home runs he hit last season. I think there's still plenty of RBI to be had mm-hmm. In an offense that's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
You know, Cedric Mullins hasn't quite bounced back. He was on fire before he went on the IL. He hasn't been quite as good now, but all the pieces are there. Ryan Mountcastle, a player who I think
was killing the ball recently, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So he's a player I think that you should be definitely looking at. It can be hard to trade for players who are just coming off the IL because that manager is going to say like, why don't I just wait to see if he's good?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's usually like easier in theory to trade for those players than it is in reality. That's actually when you find a lot of the trade offers come is like right before they come back. You didn't see Tarek Skubal trades in early May. Right. Mm. You see him now because he's finally almost back. So when the value was probably in early May, but you didn't want to because of the extra risk. I mean, that's kind of how it trades off. So he is a player I'd be looking at. He's a player who, again, Ryan Mountcastle has power. He's a guy who can go on a tear, and you shouldn't be, as both Baseball Savant and Pitcherlist will tell you, you shouldn't be too scared off by those, by the actual batting average and slug, because under the hood, it has been better.
Right. Right. Let's talk about one other hitter that plays for a tough offense. He's basically one of the stars of the offense, in my opinion. But so far has had a little rough start to the season. But Keibert Ruiz, the catcher for the Washington Nationals, really good contact skills if you look at his stats. Doesn't walk a ton, but his 8.1 strikeout rate is down from 11.5 last season. So he makes good contact. Good minor league pedigree, 301, 356, 453, minor league triple slash. I believe he was like one of the top prospects in the Dodger system, right? Within the trades that they made for Trey Turner and Scherzer, I think he came over. He's flashed some power in the minors as well. Started to develop a little of that power in the big leagues too. 9 home runs in his first 68 games. And since we're talking expected stats, I'll just say 233 batting average, 288 expected batting average, slug of 376, expected slug 477, and WOBA of 292, expected WOBA 353 for Keibert Ruiz.
Yeah, and Pitcherlist Stackhouse number, the Pitcherlist expected stats are pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. Ruiz doesn't have, well, in years past, he's pulled the ball a lot more, but he's not doing that this season. It's a very standard sort of pulled center oppo kind of distribution. He does hit a lot of line drives. You know, I talk about it's hard for players to hit 25% line drives, mm-hmm. and definitely 30%. Keibert Ruiz is actually the type of player who can do that. Because he's a slap hitter, right? I mean, he's very much like if I overuse the Luis Arias thing all the time. So I'll use another name like a David Fletcher, right? Mm. I mean, he's a guy, he's just trying to slap the ball. He's hitting more home runs than he has, obviously, in his previous seasons. Ruiz, I mean, part of that is just like maturing at the big leagues. We talk about how hard it is for catchers to be rookies, right? Especially sure. Like he's on a bad team. He really does want, you know, obviously he does want to hit. He does not miss when he swings. Mm-hmm. And he does swing, you know, a fair amount of the time, right? So he's in the top 10% of the league when it comes to his swinging strike rate. It's down at 6.8% right now. I mean, it's quite good, right? It's almost half the league average in terms of when he swings, does he miss? So, I mean, again, he's very good at, you know, kind of swinging and hitting, right? It's, mm-hmm. but he's not going to be like an approach guy, right? Like a lot of our skills metrics are just not going to be big fans of Keibert Ruiz because he's not trying to wait for the perfect pitch. He's trying to take the pitch he got and put it somewhere in the grass. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's all he's trying to do. And if you want like a comp on him, wow, I am stunned by how good we expect him to be slugging right now. Goodness, 483. That's the expected slug from pitcher list. The ex BABIP isn't very good, weirdly, but
it's not far off. By the way, it's not far off from regular Statcast, 477.
Yeah. Either way, those numbers surprised me because but to get to that number, it's not going to be because he's hitting a ton of home runs. Although this season, I mean, he could hit, I think, 15.
Sure.
Right?
He has 9 already.
Yeah, he's got 9 already. So even if you expect him to sort of come back towards the home run rates he showed in years past, he still could get to 15. Mm-hmm. There's upside at maybe 20, right?
I think so.
Just remember, I mean, he is a catcher who is going to get days off. This is a guy who, I mean, he is behind the plate for them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love Keibert Ruiz in points leagues because this is the exact profile I want from a points league guy, especially a catcher. He hits towards the middle slash top of the lineup. He puts everything in play. He doesn't strike out, right? And in points leagues, walks can be good, but walks are never good as hits, mm-hmm. right? A walk is never as good as a hit.
Correct.
At best, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say a walk is never better than a hit. There are situations where a walk is as good as a hit. Base is empty. It's as good as a single in most point leagues, not all, but in most. Mm-hmm. But that's where it stops because you almost never get an RBI from a walk. And if you did get an RBI from a walk, a hit would have been better, right? Mm-hmm. Because then you have a chance to get two because you can never get two RBI from one walk.
Mm-hmm.
You might score a run, but they're going to have to get you all the way around the bases. Whereas with a hit, you could end up on second. Error could get you. I mean, there's other ways, you know. So basically, a walk is limited, but he doesn't walk. So you don't worry about that. It's not a good offense, but it's a scrappy offense. I'll say this. Those of you that do, you know, a lot of folks, you know, stream pitchers, all these kinds of things. And Washington is this one that when you look at it, you're like, oh, great, a matchup with Washington. But they're actually a scrappy, annoying offense because they just, as a team, they don't strike out a lot. Right. I mean, you look at Keibert Ruiz, you look at Lane Thomas, even some of the worst hitters in that lineup just don't strike out a ton. So they strike out like less than 20% of the time as a team. It makes them really tough to scream against. And part of it is because of guys like Keibert Ruiz. I think that he is the ceiling is kind of capped. And I sort of said I'd make a comp. If I had to make a comp, it's what I hoped Alejandro Kirk could be this season. Right. And that's like 15 home runs, really good ratios. The ratios are bad right now. I think they will get better. I think Keibert Ruiz has a chance to be the type of catcher who you can stop streaming, right? You can just keep your catcher. That's not what he's been so far, but I think he can get there. Right. And it's just a matter of, I mean, a lot of it is luck. When you know, I love using expected stats as a barometer for what did happen, because to me, it's one of the best, one of the things that they are best at is telling you if a guy has been lucky or unlucky. Right. Mm-hmm. It's not the whole story but like when we talk, you know, I use the example of Patrick Bailey, another catcher who's had awesome X stats. He has not been lucky in the sense that he's hitting a bunch of line drives and they should have been hits. He's been lucky that so many of those have been line drives. A lot of those will turn to fly balls, right? Another player we saw that happen with is Matt McClain. Although Matt McClain has enough power that because those line drives are turning to fly balls, they can also leave the park. And we've seen Matt McClain hit a lot more home runs. It's because he's getting the ball up now. You know, he's finally getting under a couple of those pitches. He was driving them as line drives. Now they're going up in the air. That's not what Keibert Ruiz is going to do. Keibert Ruiz is going to be a guy who continues to hit line drives, and he's going to get plenty of hits. Those are going to find grass. I think he can be a 260, 270 hitter rest of the way. I mean, that's a very road, like projections won't have him that high. I think he can do that. I think the slug will be good, but not because of home runs necessarily, but I think he can slug in like the low, you know, the medium fours, like somewhere between like 430, 450. And that, I mean, that's a pretty darn good catcher. He's always going to, you know, he's going to play as often or more than most other catchers.
He's young, so he might play a little bit more than the three or four games that a typical catcher might, a veteran.
Yeah. I mean, he got to 112 games last year. I think he can be better than that this season. And again, he's already at a career high in home runs with nine. He had seven in 2022. So, I mean, the pieces are all kind of there to be a very good fantasy catcher. I think that if you've been streaming, this is a good time to sort of scoop him up. He is out there in a lot of leagues, not all of them, obviously, but he is out there in a lot of leagues. I like him better rest of season than, say, Patrick Bailey, Elias Diaz. Not Yannier Diaz. I'm a little more on Yannier Diaz right now. But you know, other, you know, I'm just kind of looking at catchers that are maybe, that are rostered in a lot of, in some leagues. I'd probably put him in that same, he's not in the same tier on the hitter list right now, but I'd put him in that same vein of Henry Davis. Henry Davis, you know, we talked about him last week too. He gets to play the outfield every day. That's the advantage for Henry Davis. And Henry Davis has more of a ceiling because he's got more power, but Ruiz has a higher floor, and he, again, he is someone I'd take, you know, in that kind of range. I'd probably prefer Henry Davis, but if Henry Davis is gone, I'd say Keibert Ruiz is probably my very next pick. I'd be fine dropping. Let me just go through some names. I'd be more than fine dropping to get Keibert Ruiz. If you've been tired of Francisco Alvarez and you don't want to ride that ride anymore, go ahead. I'm fine with that in single catcher leagues.
Later, yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, Alejandro Kirk. I actually like Ruiz more than I like Kirk. So I do that. I drop Gary Sanchez for him. In a single catcher league, I'm probably pretty tired of MJ Melendez. He's become nothing more than pure volume. I'm not, you know, I keep getting asked if someone should drop Dalton Varsho, and the answer is always no. So for the few of you that have not heard me say it yet, no, don't drop Dalton Varsho.
Is it the stolen bases that make you say no?
And just ceiling. His ceiling is so much higher than the other guys. You know, another guy who's similar to Keibert Ruiz, but I like Keibert Ruiz more, is Gabriel Moreno. Moreno, another guy, slaps the ball a lot, puts everything in play. And, you know, as far as, you know, a young guy, if you want to go ceiling, I think ceiling is Bo Naylor, but the floor for Ruiz, I think, is just so much higher that if you're in a, you know, a transaction limited league or something like that, absolutely. Keibert Ruiz is rostered in about half of ESPN leagues. So, you know, he might not be out there for everyone, but for the ones he is out there, I'd go ahead and go get him. I think all those names, Kirk and Sanchez, Melendez. I don't know about Wilson Contreras yet. I'm kind of on the borderline there. Maybe for Wilson Contreras.
Wow. Yeah, he's looked upon as a guy that really is going to make a comeback.
I hope so.
You know, yeah.
You know, I was talking to her name's Sarah. She's with Bleed Cubby Blue.
And Sarah Sanchez, right?
Yeah, Sanchez. Yes. She's really smart.
That's why we're here together.
Yeah, you know. she's really, really bright. If you get a chance to listen to her, interact with her, you should. I remember talking to her at First Pitch Arizona. And what she was talking about with Wilson Contreras is that he was in their development system since he was like 17 years old with the Cubs. Everything he knew was Chicago Cubs. He had never experienced anything else. And sure, he stayed in the same division, but and as much of a veteran as he is, he still only worked for one company his whole career, right? If you worked at one company your whole career, and then, you know, for us,
go
regular
with the enemy.
Yeah.
Basically, so, that's what
But like, it's, you know, I've worked at a bank for quite a while, and I know if I go to another bank, I can be a good performer. But I have a lot to learn because just the way they do things, the way they coach me, the way they, you know, the positions they put me in, they're just different, right? And I'm also moving, right? So imagine you've been working with the same company for, you know, for our, in our world to be like 20 years. Then all of a sudden you pick up, you move, to a company that you're familiar with, but it's not quite the same. You got to learn the new systems. You got to get all your new logins. You got to do all this
stuff.
How
about this? How about this, that the Cardinals, and they're, I don't know, they've been very wacky this year. They decide, you know what? We don't think he's a catcher anymore. Remember that? They did that for like a week. And then, I mean, this is a guy that's been a catcher, a good catcher for his entire career. And then all of a sudden, like you said, first of all, he's going through all these adjustments and learning to, you know, the St. Louis Cardinal way. And then all of a sudden they say, you know what? I know that we signed you to be a catcher, but we don't really think you're a catcher anymore. You're going to DH. And then it's like guy's head must have been spinning.
Yeah, like what? So if we're going to talk about like the human element, I mean, that's a big part of it. So
yeah, sure it is. I
think most projection systems are going to want Wilson Contreras over Keibert Ruiz. However, I think it'd be a really interesting trade offer if you wanted to maybe secure the floor. It's weird to say that I think Keibert Ruiz has a better floor than Wilson Contreras, but I think he does. Obviously, no one in a dynasty league would do that, but in a redraft league, I think that's a very interesting move. And especially if you've, I mean, it's hard to get better in ratios in Roto right now, but if you've been struggling maybe a little with ratios and just counting stats in general, and you want to try something new, I bet a Keibert Ruiz manager would consider Wilson Contreras for sure, because the projections are going to tell them they should do that. But one of the ways to get ahead in fantasy baseball, of course, is to find the places where you disagree with the projections. You know, Ruiz is a rookie who's not shown a lot of power in the past, so the projections are going to pull him down a little for that. But he is hitting the ball better this year. We know that the expected stats are telling us that Ruiz should have much better numbers than he does. They're not quite, you know, again, they're not super predictive, but those numbers do tell us that if he keeps doing what he's doing, better results will come. So, and there's no reason to expect Keibert Ruiz to stop doing what he's doing.
Right.
I mean, that's the other thing, because, you know, I say it again, Patrick Bailey, good example. If he keeps doing what he's doing, he will continue to get good results. However, people don't hit line drives like that, right? Outside of like Freddie Freeman. Okay. So I don't expect Patrick Bailey to keep doing what he's been doing. Therefore, I don't use the expected stats to look forward. Keibert Ruiz, I do expect, he's doing the stuff that I thought he'd be doing. And the expected stats tell me the results are good. Therefore, will he be quite that good? Maybe not. Those are really nice numbers. But I think that he can trend that direction because he can keep doing what he's doing. And to me, that's the way to use expected stats.
Right.
Say, can they keep doing what they're doing? Isak Paredes, another perfect example. The reason I like him better than a lot of projection models do is that Our pitcher list expected stats say what he's been doing with these pulled balls say that he can continue to put up very good numbers because he's able to pull those fly balls. Now, the StatCast numbers on Baseball Savant say, look, batted ball direction is noisy, and league-wide, batted ball direction is noisy. But for specific players, it's not. So with Isak Paredes, you say, if I think he can't continue to pull fly balls, more often than he doesn't, right? I'm not saying he has to continue to do it at the ridiculous rate he's been doing it, but can he keep, you know, if you think he can continue to pull most of his fly balls, right? Like half of them, 40% of them, then you should be buying in on Isak Paredes, because a bunch of people are going to be willing to trade him to you because the expected stats are not good, especially the ones on Savant. But if you don't think Isak Paredes can continue to pull fly balls, then you should definitely be looking at those expected stats and being very concerned, right? The expected stats on like on Baseball Savant, which is going to more or less be agnostic to his batted ball direction. And if you think the batted ball direction is fluky, you should go to Baseball Savant, use those expected stats to think this is more likely to be what happens going forward if he does, because he's not going to continue what he's doing. But now that you have two sets of expected stats, you have this new weapon in your pocket, which is, I don't just look at the same numbers everyone else sees. I look at the two different numbers and say, okay, I've now got two sets of very descriptive things. One's a little more predictive, one's a little more descriptive. The more descriptive one, pitcher list, I say, if I think the player can continue with the batted ball direction profile they have, then I should use pitcher list as the basis for going forward. Right. If you say the batted ball direction is totally noise, right? I should use Statcast going forward. And then in both cases, you say, also, what's the line drive, fly ball, ground ball rate? Is it in line with career numbers or something really, really different? Here's a really good example of that too. Remember Yandy Diaz? Of course you do, because he's still alive. He's still playing. Yandy Diaz has really fallen off the power wagon, mm-hmm. right? He's not hitting home runs. I'm not sure he has a home run in June, or that he did have one in June. He's been sitting at 12 home runs basically forever. Right. So yeah, confirmed 0 home runs and 105 plate appearances in June. Right. And there's a good reason for that. Well, good is the wrong word. There is an easy to understand reason for that. And that's basically he started the season hitting a bunch of balls in the air, right? 38% fly ball rate for Yandy Diaz to start the year. That is really, really high for him. Right. And he did it through May. And that's when mm-hmm. we started saying like, oh, this might be new. Right. This is something that he's not really shown us he can do for any extended period of time. So we got very excited. And then in June, what happens? Those fly balls
on the ground again.
Yeah. Those fly balls, like literally almost, 15 to 20% extra on the fly balls. They all reverted back to line drives and ground balls. That didn't hurt his batting average too much, right? Because fly balls actually don't help your batting average all that much. Because again, if they don't leave the yard, they're probably outs. But the problem for Yandy Diaz is that a bunch of them turned into line drives and that helps his batting average and stuff. That's great. But all the power's gone because it's only in June, a 16.9% fly ball rate. So when we were looking at the expected stats, they were telling us that Yandy Diaz was legit. What he was doing was real. And it was because again, with that exit velocity, with that launch angle, he got the results we expected. The thing you had to do at the time and that, I'm not saying I did it perfectly either because I eventually bought in, was you had to think, but will he continue with that launch angle? Will he continue to get balls in the air? As of right now, the answer now looks like crap. Mm-hmm. No, right? Mm-hmm. He won't because he's not. So So the expected stats for Yandy Diaz are of slightly limited value because we expect one of those variables to, if we expect one of those variables to stop working, then we're not going to try the predictive value of expected stats is out the window, mm-hmm. right? Because the predictive value only works if the inputs stay relatively the same, right? Which is why, again, the expected stats you'll see on FanGraphs and on Baseball Savant are a little bit more predictive because you don't have to worry about one of the variables. You get to say, I don't care if he keeps up the same batted ball direction, right? I only care if he continues to get the ball in the air like this and hit it this hard. We knew Yandy Diaz was going to hit it this hard. We didn't know if he'd keep getting the ball in the air. If you thought he would, then the expected stats were telling you that it's about to be a very profitable season. If he didn't, you had to sort of wonder, okay, but then what will happen? Right. And it turns out he just kind of went back to normal and maybe he does find the fly ball thing again later on the season. But until then, he looks like the pretty good, not outstanding fantasy first and third baseman that Yandy Diaz has kind of always been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So before we head off to our next break, just go back to Wilson Contreras and Kiba Ruiz. And I think it's going to be pretty difficult to make a one-for-one trade because both of these guys are having subpar years so far, but both of them, and looking at the Statcast expected stats, it's a rosy picture, because you're looking at a 214 batting average for Wilson Contreras and a 264 expected batting average. The expected slug is almost 100 points over his 366 current slug, and the expected WOBA is like 53 points over his current WOBA. So what's going to happen is fantasy managers trading for either one of these guys is going to try to get a bargain and target another fantasy manager who doesn't look at expected stats. So the person that is buying either Ruiz or Contreras thinks that they're getting a deal because they're getting a guy who's underperforming, but based on expected stats, he's not as bad as his actual numbers, show. So it's kind of interesting.
for what it's worth, our pitcher list expected stats are not quite so rosy on Wilson Contreras.
Yeah. Okay.
So not so rosy. They think he's been unlucky, but the expected batting average on pitcher list is .235.
Wow.
And the expected slug is .404.
That's a big difference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is kind of weird because he's, it's not as though, so normally I'd expect that's because like something else is going on, but I'm guessing without having dug into it a little more, I'm guessing it's because a lot of the fly balls are going to the wrong parts of the ballpark. So he's, you know, Contreras is kind of hitting, he's sort of spraying the ball to all directions, kind of the same rate. Historically, he's been more of a pull hitter. So if he does start pulling the ball more, I would expect the numbers to be a little bit more in line with what StatCast is saying. So basically, if he reverts to what he's been in years past, I would say the Baseball Savant numbers, the ones you see on Fangraphs, Baseball Savant, those ones are more likely to be an example of what it is going forward. If you think he's going to continue to hit the ball to all fields equally, then actually the numbers on pitcher list are going to be a better barometer of, or a better sort of gauge of what to expect going forward. Because when you're hitting sort of, you know, these sort of average hits kind of all around the field, it's just not, it's not as good as, again, pulling the ball a little more. Because when you're hitting the ball in the air, you want it to go pull in every situation, because you're going to be able to get more power on it. And in most cases, it's the most direct path to getting over the fence. Not every case, but for Contreras, it should pretty much always be pull because he's not a Red Sox.
Right. All right. So we'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk about a few players of interest off of the hitter list. We'll talk Julio Rodriguez, Xander Bogaerts. Also want to get your take, Scott, on Jordan Westberg. We'll talk about them right after this. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. Joe Galina here. You could follow me on Twitter at Joe Galina, J-O-E-G-A-L-L-I-N-A. And you could follow my buddy Scott Chu at If The Chu Fits. And Scott, you put out the hitter list. It comes out every Wednesday. I love reading it. And let's talk about some of the players on the hitter list that caught my eye. Julio Rodriguez, first round pick in a majority of preseason drafts, down nine spots. Looks like he's experiencing some growing pains, batting .184 against off-speed stuff this season after hitting .250 against them last season. Barrel rate is down about 5%. Not having a terrible sophomore season, but 13 homers, 43 RBI, and a .243 batting average. That's not first-round value.
It is not. So I think both of us and probably everybody can preface everything by saying long term we still expect this to be one of the better hitters in baseball. That's actually too soft. He's going to be, we think, a top 10 to top 15 hitter you know, for the rest of his career based on what we've seen so far. This is a hot, I mean, top notch sort of talent coming in, but the power hasn't quite been there this season. He actually sort of is on pace to have similar home run totals compared to last season. He hit 28 home runs last season. He's at 13 right now through 79 games. If you double it, that gets you to about 25. He's actually, of course, he's running and stealing much, much more, right? He's got 19 stolen bases so far. If, you know, if he continues to run at the rate he has, he's going to threaten 40, right? So, I mean, 25 home runs, 40 stolen bases, not a guy you want, you're complaining about necessarily, right? But we are seeing the batting average and the ratios really take a tumble, right? He's he's lost almost 40 points of batting average, 40 points of OBP. And the reason that those have the same exact drop is because he's walking at almost exactly the same rate. He's striking out at a very similar rate. I think a lot of us expected Julio Rodriguez to have an improvement in the strikeout rate because he did improve as last season went on, but it looks like he sort of leveled out around this sort of 25, 26%. He's hitting the ball in the air about as much as he did before. The slugging's way, way down simply because of quality of contact, right? What's kind of interesting is that on the expected stat side, at least from a pitcher list perspective, they're basically the same. right? So last season it was an expected 235. This season it's an expected 249. In terms of expected batting average, expected WOBA last season, 325, this season, 324, right? So not much of a sophomore slump, I'd say. So, you know, with Julio Rodriguez, I think just, it's hard to go into every single little detail about how this is happening, but functionally it kind of looks like he's simply not, I mean, he's not quite barreling the ball, but barrel rate isn't the only number you kind of want to look at. Basically he was better last season at making solid contact as well as hitting more barrels, right? Because if you only look at barrels, you're like 3% barrel rate. That shouldn't make this big of a difference. And it doesn't, right? It's that he was, you know, about 3% better with barrels. He was like 2.5% better at solid contact, right? And those have all kind of turned to what we call like flares and burners, right? So a flare is a ball hit in the shallow outfield. A burner is a really hard ground ball, right? So like the hard contact's the same. It's not high, but it's roughly the same. The problem is that the quality has dipped just by a bit, right? So stuff that used to be a hard hit, you know, like basically a solid contact is functionally a barrel that's just off on one of the launch angle or the exit velocity, right? So we call it solid contact because, you know, it was 94 miles an hour, right? And it met every other criteria for a barrel, but it was 94 miles an hour. So we'd call that solid, right? Because we have these hard, somewhat arbitrary cutoffs. So when you put those two numbers together last season, it was 21.2% of the time he was either barreling it up or making solid contact. This year, that number's down to about 16.2%. So when you put those together, that's where you see this big drop in his batted ball profile, right? So you're like, man, the results aren't there. It's because he went from a little over 21% of solid and barrel to like 16%, right? 16.2. That's a fairly significant drop, right? So when that happens, you start going like, oh, now I get it, right? Now I see why everything else can mostly be the same. But instead of like having all these ones that were either barrels or almost barrels, those have now turned into flares and burners, which are sort of the same concept, in which maybe it's hit at a good launch angle or it's hit at a really good exit velocity, but the other variable is now way off, right? Hit it real hard at a 0-degree launch angle, right? That's not close to a barrel. Or hit a great launch angle, right? Like a, you know, random number, like a 20%. That's great. But he didn't hit it very hard, right? He only hit it 80 miles an hour. So now it's like, it might drop in front of the left fielder or it might not, right? It might land in the glove. So that's really been the change. And the difference between all those like barrel, solid, and flares and burners in terms of like where they are on the bat, it's millimeters, man. It is small amount different on the bat. So that's really what's happening to Jose Ramirez. And when I say all that, I make it sound like it's so bad. No, that's exactly what I want the problem to be for Julio Rodriguez.
Julio Rodriguez, yeah.
Because that means he's almost there. I mean, he's almost there. I'm not asking him to strike out a bunch less. I'm not asking him to walk. I'm not even asking him to change his approach. Like maybe be a little bit more selective with pitches because, you know, by doing that, you can find better pitches to hit. But like he's so close, right? And there's still a lot of production there, right? Again, if things continue at their current pace, he'll get close to 90 RBI. He'll get close to 100 runs scored. He'll get close to 40 stolen bases, and he'll get close to 25 home runs. Those are all amazing numbers. Even if the ratios end up being like sort of subpar, you still get, you know, good production kind of across the board. And you know that he's so close to also doing like to also just improving all of that, right? He's always been able to adapt as he went up through the minor leagues. I think he'll be able to make this adjustment too. It's just a matter of, can he do it this season and how soon will it be?
Right. All right. Good stuff. Like you said, I believe in him. And so do you. So definitely going to be one of the bright stars in fantasy and just regular baseball for years to come. But let's talk Xander Bogaerts down 18 slots on the hitter list, shortstop, for the Padres, obviously a long-term shortstop for the Red Sox. This is his first year in San Diego. Basically just looks like an average short offensively, just an average shortstop, right? A third straight year of hard hit rate and launch angle decline. It's actually 4 years of hard hit rate decline per Fangraphs. 3 years of hard hit rate decline if you look at the StatCast version of hard hit rate. Right now, career high ground ball rate. And, you know, that's obviously affecting, you know, his power numbers. Batting 255 in his first 77 games with a 383 slug. And this is a guy with a career in 11 years, 290 batting average and 454 slug, Scott.
Yeah, and last season, the ratios were all there. The home runs kind of weren't. The problem is at StatCast, at least the expected stats we get over at Pitcher List say last season he was kind of a fraud, right? Hit 307. We thought he should have hit 256. And again, expected stats, especially ours, very, very descriptive, right? Very good at telling us what should have probably happened. And, you know, our model was not impressed, right? And it's still not impressed, right? Last season, it thought the expected batting average was 256. This year, it thinks it should be 248, right? Pretty close to what he's actually doing. Both seasons, 2022 and 2023, Pitcher List expected slugging for Xander Bogaerts, 401, exact same number. Expected WOBA, 322 and 324 for Xander Bogaerts, right? So basically, it's saying, you know, last season, the ratios were in line with history. Expected stats were not. This season, numbers and expected stats are sort of offline with history, but in line, at least on the expected stats side, with what we thought we saw last year. That, to me, is the real concern. It's so basically, our model thinks he is the same hitter that he was last season, only without the luck. Right. So last season he had a BABIP, Xander Bogaerts had a BABIP of 362. He had an expected BABIP of 297. Right. That's, we're talking almost 60 points different, right? Well, more than 60 points, almost 70 points different. Right. So there, and you know, so you lob 50 something percent or 50 points off the batting average. And what do you get? You get what he's been this season. Right. So, you know, Xander Bogaerts, it's very concerning to me that the expected stats are very similar to what they were last season. And now the results match those expected stats. So I don't have a lot of like happy, warm things to say. I mean, he's been hitting the ball a little bit better lately, I guess. It's not as though he's striking out more or walking less. He's doing both of those at about the same rate. He just doesn't hit it as hard, right? And we just talked about flares and burners and barrels and all that stuff. When you look at Xander Bogaerts, I mean, again, it's a lot of stuff that's just like not very exciting. So last season and this season, that barrel rate, you know, he had a 9% barrel rate and then it was 6.1 in 2022 and 7% this season. So down like 2% from 2021. The solid contact, so almost a barrel, that was 6.2%. That's now down to 4.3% in 2023. So there's another 2 points there all of a sudden. But also, there's one more thing that's worse, right? Because flares and burners, the one where they get like basically half the barrel equation right and half of it very wrong, that's way down, right? Last season, 28.1%. The year before, 25.4%. This season, 20.4%. They've all turned into what we call, a lot of them have turned into top, you know, we call it topped, right? Topped means you hit the top of the ball with the bat, which means you hit it right into the ground. A topped ball would be one with a negative launch angle. So basically, he's not hitting it as hard. He's hitting it down into the ground a lot more. And basically all of the good types of batted balls, basically we consider flares and burners, solid, you know, solid contact and barrels to be good batted balls, right? That's way down. We actually have a stat for this called ideal plate appearance that we just had an article come out about it too. If you want to read it, it's pretty good. Just talking about like, what is an ideal plate appearance, but basically that number is way down. So it's down to 22.1%. That's 17th percentile in baseball. Like the barrel rate is fine. Everything else is bad. Right. So he's hitting way too much stuff with a negative launch angle. He's not hitting anything quite, you know, he's not hitting anything really that good. Ideal plate appearance is now down to 17th percentile in baseball. He was never a guy that hit it that hard in the first place. I'm not saying I'm declaring independence, but I now view him as a very average to back end starting shortstop who maybe this season finishes with like 15 to 18 home runs, 15 to 18 stolen bases. He does have a career high of sorts in stolen, maybe not a career high, but Xander Bogaerts has stolen more bases this season than he has at least since 2018. Mm. Right.
So which would stealing make sense a lot based on the new, you know.
Yeah. So he's running more, and that's cool, right? But like 15 to 20 home runs, 15 to 20 stolen bases, and actually, I would say more. It's more like 15 to 17 home runs, 15 to 17 stolen bases, with fine-ish ratios.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what am I supposed to be excited about?
Yeah, right? Especially with the depth at the position too.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, I'm glad you mentioned it. That's the other big piece. It's like shortstop is super deep.
Mm-hmm.
This was supposed to be that like anchor, like the last of the good ones. Mm-hmm. And now he's more like one of the next ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he, to me, in my mind, I can't tell you if that's exactly where he is. I mean, I think they're a little bit further apart on the hitter list, but like you should have the same feelings that you have about Dansby Swanson, a guy who will play every day, but is not like, that's not a league winner this season. That's just a guy that if you can upgrade, you will. But it's also going to be tough to find guys who come off the wire who are quite, who have anything close to that floor.
Yeah. I almost want Dansby Swanson a little bit more than I want Xander Bogaerts, even though, you know, I mean,
it feels like Dansby Swanson has a higher ceiling now, doesn't it?
Yeah. It
That's
does.
Scary.
Yeah.
These are trying times, Joe. These are trying times.
Should we talk one last player and then we'll get to Jordan Westberg quickly, or we could talk about him next week. But I wanted to talk about Francisco Alvarez, catcher for the Mets, who tumbled 41 slots on your hitter list. And unfortunately for the Mets, they're just having a terrible time of it. You know, the team that won 101 games last season. And I know a lot of Met fans, and I really feel bad for them. I do. Their Mets are 37-46, 18.5 games out of first place as we enter Sunday, July 2nd. You know, 13 home runs, the 27 RBI a little low, but the home runs are impressive, batting .217 overall. Over the past month, batting .159 with a .391 slug. Having real problems hitting left-handed pitching and 56 plate appearances, batting .113, much better against righty pitching, .260 batting average and 142 plate appearances. You know, what do you see in Alvarez cause him to tumble so much?
So a couple things. One of the things that got him to move up the list quite a bit in the first place was he had, you know, he'd heated up a bit in May and then again in sort of early June. And at that time, they moved him up to second in the batting order for like a week, right? That was very exciting to me, right? He was they were having him DH a couple times. Playing time was up. Opportunity was up. He was up in the lineup. And then it all went to heck, right? Like they just basically, they decided like, you know what? Never. He did not perform. You know, he performed okay when he got moved to the two hole at first. And then it kind of like fell off. So they moved him back down to sixth, and now he's down to like eighth, right? Sometimes ninth. He's no longer, he DH'd two different games, right? Where I was like, whoa, they're going to let him DH when he's not catching. Well, they stopped doing that. Not only did they take him out of the two hole, they stopped doing that. I gave it another week or two to see if he could kind of rebound, but instead he just kept striking out. And from there, right, it's like, well, okay, then I can't hold him in this spot on the list. Do I think the upside's there? Absolutely. He has elite power for this position.
Sure.
He's a guy who, you know, would it be that surprising if in, you know, one or two seasons we talk about him as potentially touching 30 home runs? No,
like
I don't think.
Salvador Perez type, no?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, except I hope he walks more. But because the Sal Perez formula is one that's very streaky and very hard to replicate. You just have to have an elite bat to ball skills for a very long time, which Salvador Perez has done and very few other players have. So, I mean, I think that, you know, Francisco Alvarez probably gets to 20 home runs this season because they're just going to let him play. But it's going to come with a lot of ups and downs. And so instead of, I had hoped that Francisco Alvarez, with that new spot in the batting order, and the fact that he was going to DH at times, I thought that was going to get him above the streaming tier at catcher. Mm-hmm. And 2 weeks later, it's now clear that that was a passing fancy, that they did not want to commit to him being able to DH when he's not catching. They did not commit to him staying near the top of the order, and so they put him at the bottom. And with that, so now you have streakiness and a reduced ability to get counting stats, even when he does hit home runs. That's going to pull you way down. I do think the walk rate can improve. Right now it's 6.1%. In the minors, it was always much, much higher.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he will get some of those walks back. I think the strikeout rate is been up and down. I think as long as it stays in this like 25 to 28% range, which it has for this season, I think that'll make it fine. I think there's a very good long-term catcher here. I think this season he's going to be, it feels like he's probably going to be staying in terms of the upside streamer kind of guy, as opposed to one that you want to just lock in.
Right. Yeah. I listen to New York sports radio, call-in shows here and there, and just Met fans are up in arms, and who could blame them with the way the team is, playing, and they want Buck Showalter fired, they want Epler, the GM, fired, and then I talk to Met fans, and they're like, well, Epler is going to be the guy who gets us to sign Ohtani because he has that relationship with him because he used to work for the Los Angeles Angels. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, some of the theories that Met fans that call into these radio shows are talking about, they're saying there was one call that talked about a fractured clubhouse because Francisco Lindor had promised to buy Jeff McNeil a car if he won the batting title last year. And of course, McNeil did win the batting title, but then Lindor welched on the bet. So they're saying that the clubhouse is fractured, but I do feel for Met fans, but before we leave, just, Jordan Westberg debuts at number 132. He's eligible at second and third base for the Orioles, got called up very recently. He's got good power in his pedigree. So far playing every day, we've only got, 18 plate appearances to judge him by, but 313 batting average. And like I said, has some power in the minor leagues. We'll talk about him more in coming weeks, but any initial take on your part for Jordan Westberg?
Yeah. So again, I'm not really thinking there's not really much speed here, not enough speed for you to care about anyway. I mm-hmm. liked that the power stayed in 2022 when he got to the higher levels. I loved that the strikeout rate went down in 2022 and 2023 in the higher levels, and that it's down right now. So I'm going to keep an eye on that, but it looks like the plate discipline piece should be pretty darn good. The mm-hmm. next piece I want to see, obviously he's hitting quite well right now in terms of getting the ball, getting the bat on the ball, getting the ball into the field of play. That's been pretty good. However, it has mostly been grounders and line drives. He's not really getting a lot in the air quite yet. Mm-hmm. So I do want to see that. Obviously it's so early. It's way too early to really take any conclusions from his batted ball profile in terms of launch angle and pull or oppo, those kinds of things. But that's right. What I want to see in the minors. He was able to get the ball in the air. I think as long as he keeps that ground ball rate in, the 40s or so, he should be able to get enough fly balls to really get that power to play. And by doing that, I think he can be a very useful fantasy player. So if you were to, it's hard to like project what a guy's going to do for like the rest of the season, right? Because I don't even know how many more games he's going to play necessarily.
Right.
I think that projections right now aren't super impressed with Jordan. Like they're not super impressed with Jordan Westberg. They're based almost entirely on his minor league track record. And I'm not sure. I mean, they're going to give a lot of weight to what he's done in each of the last two seasons. But man, if he can keep that strikeout rate below like 25%, and mm-hmm. continue to just keep getting the bat on the ball, get the ball in the air, I think that there is a useful and relevant middle infielder here. Well, middle and corner, maybe. He's already played three games at second and three games at third. I think that there is a chance for him to be someone that's rostered in more 12-team leagues than he isn't, right? Mm-hmm. He was absolutely worth the flyer. If he's still out there in your league and you need a middle or corner infield, he starts out, I think, with middle infield eligibility. So, if you need one, go ahead and get him. I'm not, I'm not like cutting Xander Bogaerts to get him quite yet, because the floor for Westberg is much, 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 much lower, right? This is not a top, I mean, at least coming into the season, this wasn't really a top 100 prospect. I think some people might've started putting him there as he continued to perform well in AAA this last season. But, you know, I'd say this is a guy who I think long-term we could be looking at like a 20 to 25 home run hitter. If he plays a full season, I know that feels light when you look at like 158 games in AAA over the last two seasons and he hit like 36 of them. But of course the minor leagues just play a little better for power, different pitching, things like that. So I think that he could be a 20 to 25 home run type guy, which means for the rest of the season, like it'd be awesome if he got like 7 to 10 of them. I'd say 7 far more likely than the 10.
Projection models say he's going to be playing somewhere in the low 40s in games for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that makes the projections home runs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that makes the projections a little bit weak, because they have him playing in like a little more than half of the remaining games. And if you think that he can earn that spot and keep it all the way, that's how you say, I think he'll be better than this projection. Right. So add like 50% to those totals, because while he will, you know, while theoretically he'll play more, it also means that he may also experience slumps. So you don't want to just like almost double it, because he'll get more time. Because like the more time he's there, the more times other pitchers will have a chance to adapt to him. So you try to like hedge a little bit there. But yeah, if you add like 50 to 75% to those totals, that's where you get the rosy projection of like, oh, I don't know, 7-8 more home runs. And you know, a handful of stolen bases, who cares? And maybe the ratios can be a little bit better, than they project, simply because, you know, hey, luck. No, because that batting average really came up over the last two seasons. And in 2021 and 2022, it was really down because of the strikeouts. I think he can be better at the strikeouts, which means I think he could be better with the ratios.
All right. All right, I think that should slam the lid on things for this episode. Great analysis from you, Scott. And you could follow my buddy Scott at If the Chew Fits. You could follow me at Joe Galena. I want everybody to have a very happy 4th of July celebration. Be safe out there. And hey, you know, pay attention to your fantasy teams. And we'll talk about this in the coming weeks. But you have some people that are already starting to turn their focus to fantasy football. So this is your time to shine. So, as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities, and we'll see you next time.